You're listening to We Need to Speak About Rohan, the weekly thus-spoke Kashibi Rohan podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So do not move with the Rohan gang. It's Dwayne.
Hi.
It's Niall.
We've been waiting for you.
And it's me, Brian. And on this week's episode, we are talking thus-spoke Kashibi Rohan, episode 2, Mutsukabe Hill. The latest in this detective series.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the last episode that we did to this one. I feel like by chapter 6 you've got a better handle on how to tell these sort of stories.
I mean, like, I enjoyed this one, but yeah, I get you.
Didn't they come out like chronologically this way anyway? And
is that right? Okay. Oh well.
I thought he started, at the publication history, it's actually something like this order.
Weird.
Okay, in which case he's got worse. It's very much, it's not the Rohan Kashibe in it.
I feel like it's a very, oh crap, what's the name of that fucking thing? Shibai. Yeah, I couldn't think of the name of it. It's very like, ooh, spooky story of crazy things happening.
This one was December 4th, 2007.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Millionaire Village was October 6th.
It was 16 that came first, oddly enough. Yeah. That's what tripped me up, sorry.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I had no idea about the order, just that's what it felt like. It felt like the other one he'd got a better grasp of it. Rohan kind of needs to be involved in
it. Yeah, but sort of, I had a good idea for a ghost story, which I wanted to tell. Also, Rohan was there at the end.
Now that I think about it, and it's only after this episode it's clicking with me for some fucking reason. So part 4 was a Rohan Kashibe ghost story that other motherfuckers were involved in, right? Because your one and her dog didn't have stand powers; they were just ghosts. Also, there was an alien there, but they remembered in this episode.
Rohan has binged all of Twin Peaks. It's like, that's really good. Why haven't had more psychic ghosts in it? Like, besides the ones that are already there to begin with, but while they punched each other as well.
That is an improvement, yeah.
Mm.
So in this, he's meeting another editor, Minoru Kaigamori.
I think it's not that his editors are dying. I feel like this guy quit soon after.
Who has done the dignity of showing up early to meet a manga artist.
6 minutes early! Come on, man.
As a manga editor, neither late nor early, he arrives precisely when he means to.
Luckily, it's Rohan he's shown up to early, so it's not too much of a
problem.
It's
a good thing you met me. I'm polite when it comes to manga artists.
But basically, he wants an advance because he's run out of money, and he explains why. And he's like, but didn't you just buy a mountain? He's like, no, I bought... How many mountains has he bought?
Six mountains. He bought, like, all the mountains around the mountain that he bought.
Yeah.
And it's like, so wait, they weren't investments? Like, no, they were not investments. It was research for a story. But,
Yes, because he bought one to investigate the yokai on that mountain, but then he heard that a development company was planning to develop on the mountains around it, and he didn't want the development company to disturb the yokai. So he bought the other mountains as well. And it turned out there wasn't going to do any development work anyway, so he just wasted his money on...
Well, I mean, like, how could they do the development work? He bought 6 of the mountains they wanted to work on.
Yeah.
Ah, dear.
Well, as well, you could have, like, had, like, a background thing running where he would just, like, try and stall him out, like, you know, once he's finished his research, it's like, please, we'll play anything you want, as good as the mountains, like, anything I want, eh? And then you could probably jack up the price into the bathroom for a tidy profit.
Yes. Mm. As he had to sell all his valuables... And explains that he's living with a school.
I just sell all my Sailor Moon figurines, I think is the thing.
This must be after his house burned down as well, because the alien dude is there.
The two people who used to be bad guys and are apparently nice guys now. Well, we know one's a nice guy. I don't think we ever
saw. Are they nice, though? I feel like they're still dicks.
Yes, but they show up to get an autograph because it's famous manga artist Rohan
Kishida. Like, these guys were actually retired in JoJo's, not the inverted commas retired.
Yes. Every bone in their body shattered, atomized, yep. Even.
That'll do it. Early retirement.
And Midori's like, oh, I'll get rid of these guys. He goes, don't worry, this is Rohan Kishida you're dealing with. I can whack out an autograph and a sketch just before you can tell him to get lost.
He also, like, has a pointillism, like, thing of Heaven's Door, isn't it? With the copy.
Yes, he sprays copy at their pieces of paper.
It's a pretty good drawing.
It is. Yeah,
since he didn't even get up out of his seat to do it.
It's at range. No, that's accuracy. When Giorgio should have brought him along when we were trying to hunt those rats, he would have gotten a shot off much easier.
But it turns out it was worth it because indeed there was a yokai there and he has a tough story to tell his editor, but only to his editor. And then we get the story of a student heiress who's arguing with her boyfriend.
The initial shot of it shows it like that. It looks like she's killing him for revenge because she's standing over the bloody body. But then the context is, well, ludicrous.
Stranger.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Well, yes, it seems the way her boyfriend Gunpei, she's also got a fiance from an arranged marriage from her father. So she's trying to get rid of, pay him off, even though she's in love with him. They get into an argument. He falls backwards and hits his head on a putter in the golf bag, which has somehow got into her room.
Yeah, there was violence happening where I think it's like, what is it? She elbowed him when he was grabbing her, going like, hey, what if your fiance found us like this? And he slapped her and then like immediately apologized. It's like, oh, sorry, you just hit me first. And I just sort of moved out and then pushed him into a golf club, a bag of golf clubs, I guess.
Yes.
That was some like Final Destination
stuff. Yeah.
Like and also everything that follows afterwards.
Yes, very much so.
And so she's now got this dead body. And,
it totally looks like she beat him with a golf club to death.
Yeah, he thinks he's faking it, tries to heal him, then comes to terms with the fact that he's dead, but the wound in the back of his head just keeps on leaking blood no matter what she tries to do. And oh no, her father and the fiance are there. Becomes like a French farce of hiding this body and cleaning up the blood.
Like, can we come in? No, I'm changing.
Just okay. A minute.
Like, besides all the other things that she was doing to not act rationally, why did she take off her clothes? Was that not to get blood on it?
So she put them back on and won't have these massive stains ripping with gore all over.
I figured that was the reason, but it's just sort of all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's clearly in the show not doing it for sexy purposes. It's doing it for, this is a fucked up situation.
Yes, because the sexy purpose of the dead body is only talked about, thankfully, not to see.
God. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can do with just a theory there. Yeah, that's fine.
And so she ends up getting married to her fiancé while still keeping this dead body hidden and taking the... It's always like the same amount of blood comes out of the head wound each day.
Yeah, the final disguise was she like rolled him up on a carpet, threw him on the fridge and was drinking his blood pouring out.
Yes.
In order to disguise it. That was nasty. But yeah, the continued thing of she has to dump, I forget, like some, like a quart or something like that of his blood every day. A specific amount, yeah.
Then Rohan comes to investigate.
He says, completely by accident, just chance coincidence, he bumped into her one day, opened up her face, and couldn't help but read all of her dirty little secrets in there. He's like, oh, I gotta get in on this.
Yeah. That's kind of my problem with his involvement in this story, is it just involves him bumping into people and reading their
But
brains.
Like I said, that's very like Jessica Fletcher. That's very like, I'm going to fucking get involved in this. This sounds like my kind of thing.
Well, no, Jessica Fletcher's always like some niece or nephew or goddaughter.
I feel like she happens to walk into town sometimes and there's a murder and she's like, all right, I'm all about this. Yeah. Like her relations to investigating the murders are tenuous at best.
Yeah. Well, I know, but there is the link there. She's like if the matriarch in Summer Wars was going around Japan doing investigations, i.e. she knows everybody in the entire country.
I feel like she's like the curse in this thing, that it's like, yeah, people curse to die around her, that kind of thing.
Yes, and so that's how he discovers this and goes off to investigate. And how do we get to the part that the children he's had with the fiancé are actually with the corpse?
So, like, one thing he says, like, he read in her face diary is she found by, like, if she puts him with, like, a spray water bottle, his skin rehydrates and he looks like he did before he died, like, temporarily, and I assume he bleeds it out the next day or whatever. And the developer, is it a developer or like some kind of like salesman kind of guy, is trying to convince Rohan to sell him this mountain.
Yeah.
And he bumps into, well, I mean, like she, the little girl finds him and is like, hey, you're the famous manga artist. But I was told not to talk to strangers, and she tries to run away from him and like instantly splits her head open. And then he figures out, it's like, oh fuck. Like, that all of that basically was like, well, she just bust her head open in a really stupid way and died. She's probably your man's daughter, which means she had sex with the corpse, which means she has corpse babies that are also cursed and trying to curse other people by making it look like you murdered them.
Gross.
It's weird. It's a weird thing.
It's like that Japanese horror style of like the ongoing cursed thing, like the ring or the grudge that keeps on echoing down the ages.
Yeah. And in this one, there's a, like, the conclusion it kind of comes to is there's a literal progeny of these cursed people. I'm not exactly sure what you'd even call it.
Well, it's the yokai likes, the yokai's joy, the greatest joy this yokai gets is dying in front of people.
Because then they have to deal with it, and it'll either ruin their life, or they'll have to spend the rest of their life covering it up and, you know, ruin their life in a different way.
Yeah, well...
So to prevent this girl from dying, he opens up her face and writes in, you do not know Rohan Kishibe, and you are unable to.
You're unable to perceive him. Rohan
Kishibe. That's essentially him going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I'm not dead, undo, you're not dead, and you don't know me.
Like, it initially seems like he's trying to alter the evidence, but like, if she couldn't have recognized him to run away from him, if she didn't know who he was, so he changed the rules of how she died, therefore she didn't die.
Yeah, but that's like, that is like ridiculously powerful, but that means that Goro can just like, go and alter events in the past so that they affect her outcome in the present.
Well, he went a few pages back and wrote it in, maybe.
Did he know he could do that when Kira was blowing up time? Because come on, that would have been a lot easier.
You can't really write into their face if they're exploded. That's a thing he can't undo.
Ah, so Kira saw him coming a mile away.
Then we briefly get a glimpse of the yokai possessing the girl.
Mm.
As it yells at, or like makes a horrible sound at Rohan, and then she just turns into like a less creepy version of she was before she met Rohan. She seems like a normal girl at that point. And he's what does he say? I'm not a detective or a journalist, so I'm just a
regular manga artist.
A manga artist. So I'm not going to do any more investigating. She seems to have, basically like, well, Naoko, the woman who has these yokai children, seems perfectly happy with her life, so why should I go and ruin it?
Because the curse will clearly get passed down, motherfucker. You just basically knocked off the ring video to someone else.
Ah, but you see, it's very isolated mountain, and no one's going to be able to build on the other mountains around it, because... Rohan owns them.
But it's not protect them, Dwayne. It's protect us.
I still feel like this is a very tuxedo mask thing. It's like, my work here is done. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he also like puts forward the theory that, oh, maybe there's lots of these creatures all among
nothing
us.
I can do about it, not, and I'm certainly not going to.
I wonder if I'll ever get to meet them one day. To find out next week in what's supposed to be Rohan episode 11. The zombie who came to
and,
her.
And what's the alien boy's
name? Oh, they say it in this one as well, yeah.
Because at this point, now all the other main characters have put in.
Yeah, I like the fact they've all arrived during the telling of this story. Because it probably did take a while.
This story, which was supposedly only for the manga editors.
Yeah, but the lad showed up and he's not going to stop telling the story.
they all start commenting on it.
That was great. Like the producer, the editor, kind of just suddenly reacting to them like they suddenly appeared. That was kind of great.
Yeah, Josuke is there all the time as well, but it's presumably the boy couldn't get the voice actor to do it at the time.
So he hasn't said anything so far.
I'll be quiet, Josuke. This isn't like you, especially around Rohan.
Maybe he just hates being around Rohan so much. He's just like, I'm just not going to interact. Just ignore him entirely.
If Josuke would actually be there, actually be able to speak, he'd be like, that's bullshit, Rohan. That never fucking happened, you big liar. Shut up, Josuke, and let me tell the story.
Yeah, Miki Taka, that's his name. Because he mentions that, you know, that he goes, oh, there's a creature like quite like that on this planet, right, over in that galaxy, yes. And he's like, are you really an alien? And then he starts going off about where his spaceship
is.
Yeah,
I assume Rohan's like, wait a minute, you are an alien, right? I mean, like, that might make it for a good story. Tell me about yourself.
And then as it pans away, we hear Okuyasu like moaning about the alien boy going off again. Because clearly he doesn't believe that.
I mean, like, to be fair, I'm kind of with Okuyasu here. I think he's just a stand user. That seems more likely. But then again, there's ghosts and shit, so why not?
Yeah, maybe just, you know.
Yeah.
Vampires.
Yes. I like the fact it is lovingly ambiguous.
Yeah, that's for the best.
Talking about it, I think I enjoyed it more than I was enjoying it as I was watching it.
I think the second, the first one, Rohan. Sorry, I was going to say the second one, the episode 6 had more comedic stuff to it.
And it felt more like, it felt like more a challenge for Rohan.
Yeah, because he was involved more. Yeah.
Yes.
Let me tell you the story how this other person, not me, had to hide a body.
I think Niall's right. I think this is a ghost story Araki had in his head. This was how he got it onto the page.
Oh, yeah. I think you're probably right there.
And to have somebody print it.
It's probably how, like Rohan must have to be the standard narrator. It's like a story, like, Hirohiko Araki presents Tales to Thrill and Chill.
Yeah. And the good news is, there's two more on the way.
I know. It's pretty good. Obviously, I can't... We're changing the world. We're like, someone's actually talking about these OVAs, like on record. And oh god, we gotta crank out more. Gotta keep that sweet, sweet content coming.
Which one's the? Is it The Run? And I can't remember what the other one was.
Oh, hang on, I gotta have it. Where the hell did I put that? I just sent it to you.
Yeah. Is it? I'm just blanking on it.
Let's do it here. It is The Run, I think, and In the Confessional, which is the first story he wrote in the series, chronologically.
Yeah, and The Run's the most recent.
I think one of my favorite things about these, and not to say that I'm not enjoying the episodes themselves, is the kind of bookends of, hey, remember all these guys you like? And I'm like, oh yeah, I love this part. It's nice. It's a nice little thing at the end where it's like, oh, and pretty much most of these guys lived happily ever after. It's nice. Yeah.
Right, moving on. As we next week will just be in Let's Go, but here's Let's Go while it still remains a show within a show. It's time to talk about Copcraft, if anyone's still watching it.
I am, but I think it's that one's going to be Let's Gone for me. I'm fucking done after this, man.
All right, tell us why.
Just not good, basically, for the most part. So what's our opening? Our opening is he wakes up and the cat's in his room and he starts giving out to her that it's like, hey, you let the cat in my room. And she's like, yeah, but... You know that time a month ago when we did that case and I did the magic to cure you? And he's like, yeah, I cured you of the allergy as well. And he's like, why the fuck didn't you tell me? I've been wearing that mask every day. But then they're hanging out in a car and I've forgotten what exactly the fuck bullshit they were talking about. But a guy takes his side mirror off his little mini. There's a chase sequence. It's not great because CGI cars. He manages.
Yeah. The two things I'd heard about it were the main essence of the plot of this episode It sounded like a really good idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the fact that this episode looked like shit.
See, that's the thing. There's the fucking, there's nuggets of brilliance there. And it, but there's so much just, it looks bad. Anyway, he pulls in front of the truck, manages to get it to overturn. Apparently that was a, I've forgotten the name for them. I'm being very racist. And that's constantly, I think, a joke in the show by calling them elves. There was an elf driving it. The truck overturns. It was filled with porno magazines. Which is like they're absolutely legal, but obviously he was, you know, he was going to ship them over into in the magic world where they don't even have like photographs and shit, because porn sells for top elf dollar. I don't fucking know. That's basically like it's like, oh, we gotta find out what this porn smuggling thing is going on about. And there's some comedic bits where they're like. Oh yeah, that's the other thing. The elf girl parks his car. She's like, "Yes, I've been practicing at night, learning how to drive." And he's like, "Oh, okay." But obviously, she left the handbrake off, and his car slowly like pulls back into the middle of a road and gets hit by a truck and explodes. So they get chewed out by the chief, and I was like, "Oh man, I'm all ready for this kind of scene." Again, it's doing that thing where I'm like, "This is the kind of fucking show I want to watch." But then it was weirdly shot that the guys were out of frame for most of it, and it focused on the elf girl. And I'm just like, but she's kind of passive in this conversation because Chief's giving out to him. You know, it's like, hey, you guys are reckless. You overturned a truck and then you blew up your own car. But then Kay starts like crying because his car exploded. And he's like, that car was like a partner to me. He didn't cry this much when his actual partner died. And I was like, this is funny. Why is it shot like this? It's driving me crazy. The chief's like, hey, it's going to be okay, buddy. There's a police auction coming up. I'll get you a nice car out of it. He's like, really, chief? You'll do that for me? Oh, you're such a swell guy. And I was like, this should be better, but just the framing of it was driving me fucking insane. There was a bit later on where he has to explain what pornography is to the elf girl because she doesn't know. And he just hands her a magazine and lets her off to it. It's like, yeah, just people are into that and shit. And everyone else in the office is kind of poking around their cubicles and none of them want to deal with him later. Cause it's like, that's not how you tell a child what pornography is, dude. You don't just hand them pornography. He's like,
reading the whole thing cover to cover. Even
yeah, she's just going through the pages and he's just like, this is fucking disgusting. And he's like, what? It's what your mother and father did. And she's like, they did fucking not. You know,
who wants to read about Gandalf's waning libido? I mean, come on.
So no one in the office will help him investigate the pornography case that the chief has him on now. I'm calling him the chief. I can't remember what his name is. But the clearly gay detective comes in who hasn't seen how he introduced pornography to a child with. And he's like, hey, my buddy, my friend, that's a beautiful tie. You think you can help me out with this case? So he gets him to help him out. And the guy, Tony, he has an alternate personality, which is like, he kind of slicks back his hair, dons a sparkly jacket and wears some sunglasses called McLeod, where it's like his undercover persona, which he hates being, where he acts like a totally lewd gangster type. And he's getting in with the priest guy who runs the nightclub and some elf guy who wants to sell pornography. And he's like, yeah, oh, let me tell you about it. Like the elf guy's like, oh, the royals paid top dollar for like pictures of Miss June or something like that. And he's like, oh, Miss June, maybe pitch a tent, bro. And then later on, he's disgusting himself, like, in the car. He's, like, freaking out about this. He's like, oh, my God, that's not what – making love is not about this. Why do I have to play this character? And his partner's like, the more you hate it, the better you are at this. I was like, these scenes are okay. That's a fun kind of thing to do, but, God, how does it even end? Kay gets a new car. He spends all night riding her. He says this out loud. I don't even remember. The other car like crashes and explodes anyway because the elf girl drives it after her driving lessons. It's very Piccolo in that driving thing of Dragon Ball, which I was like, again, characters doing bullshit stuff. This should be a lot more fun. But how that entire thing was shot and even his new car exploding was kind of like it's like, oh, this new car, we'll just put it in for the shop. It'll be fine. But then it kind of you can hear it exploding off screen and him reacting to it. And I was like, you have to show that where like the bumper falls off and all the tires fall over and then it bursts into flame. But all of that's off screen. Just the way it was shot was fucking atrocious. And I'm done with this show. I'm done. I give it too much chances.
Did he write like a book in his first? Maybe just read the book. you can't seem to like, put it from page to screen.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think this might have been straight to,
Yeah, but he's like a light novel author, so I was wondering if it was originally.
Yeah,
but yeah, maybe it was just.
Oh no, sorry, yes, there was a light novel, yeah, not 2009. But yeah, 10 years, so there's 10-year-old.
You get what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, we'll just put the car in the shop and it'll be fine. But you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing where, you know, the hood pops open, the, like, steam comes out, the tires fall over. It needs that kind of thing to do that comedy, but it's just like, it explodes off screen. He's like, oh no! It's like, at least animate the car exploding. Come on.
Okay, let's move on to a show where we see all the action side on, all within one screen. It's Wacky TV Na Na Na. Second season, episode 19, Infiltration, The Giant Tower. I don't know what video game, if any, this is.
I feel like I know what it is, that shot of, like, the castle. I mean, like, it's not Castlevania or something, but that kind of thing, I feel like I know what that is, but it's driving me crazy.
The level, that's kind of like a level of Dig Dug.
I was thinking Dig Dug as well, because they do, like, underground stuff. That's probably the color scheme they were going for,
Yeah. But for all intents and purposes, this is less Wacky TV Na-Na, more an episode of Game Center CX, or whatever that's called. DX?
No. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This episode was so fucking cheap in that, you know, they had to do one background, a couple of very small animations. But very, very funny.
Yeah, so the central joke is that they're going through the first level of this video game, and it's kind of like...
The one-screen pitfall or something, right?
Yeah, it's like a citadel. So I'm going to guess if they get to the next one, it will just scroll up and then you'll be in another single level. Single screen section of the map. So yeah, it's like a citadel or a Jet Set Willy type level setup. And because I now know that it's directly parodying things, it must be directly parodying.
A very specific game, probably.
Yeah. And the joke is, and this may be deeper than I'm aware, is that there's the first jump over this pit the director can't do, and the other two can do without any problems. And he just keep, but because they're all in the level together, if he falls down the pit, it resets the other two back to the start as
well. They basically do the entire level, several times over, and he keeps failing at that first jump, and he can clearly use the jump button. Which is why it's so frustrating. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, so B is dash, right? It's like, yeah, but you don't need dash. It's like, well, I might need to do a run up on it. It's like, yeah, he's right there. That would help.
They dawdle too long and a zombie appears, so the cameraman has to take his skin off and use it so the zombie will slip up.
And then he just puts it back on. Your man eats the bowl of, I've forgotten the name of the...
Buddha base. And you're gonna get Paul base. No, don't eat that, because remember, the bats are going to come.
That does some of the bats.
Yeah,
but that is very easily dispatched by caltrops.
Yeah, but it's very slowly working its way across. But like, hurry, hurry, he's going to come get me. But, oh, God, what way?
The guys
all
the way
back to
the level
again. The director. Ugh.
Ah, dear. It's good. It's very, very stupid, but it's good.
Yeah.
And then we've got Dr. Stone, episode 7. Where 2 million years have gone. As they quickly deflate the Kohaku Senku ship, as Senku is like, "Very just met and you fall in love with me." And Kohaku's like, "What the fuck are you talking about?
I like first in love with you, God. I met you as well, right?"
And this is the episode we start to see the real Senku, and also having the other people react to the real Senku. In the way that his two mates would never do.
I guess these are the people who know him, and these people do not know him, and also there's more of them to react in different ways to him.
Yes, yeah. Kohaku, she was coming this way because every day she comes and gets a gigantic jar of hot spring water for her sister.
Yeah, he says, like, well, not 50 litres or something. That's way too much, but a considerable fucking amount.
I think it was 50 litres, yeah.
Was it? Jesus, okay. Yeah, yes. way too much to be carrying on your back.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, that...
Particularly when you had a tree land on
it. Yeah. It's just trying to emphasize that Kohaku is absolutely hench, even for, like, someone born and raised in the forest and in this kind of primitive village. It's still... She's still, like, above average for the rest of the population.
I fucking love that shit where she's like stumbling carrying this thing. It's like, I do this every day, and she's like, oh, and he's like, huh, catches it. It's like, you still haven't recovered. Don't worry, I'll shoulder the burden. I was like, oh, come on, don't make him the cool guy. And then instantly made him look like an asshole. And I was like, oh, yes, good job, Joe.
Oh, he's a no-calm weakling.
Yeah, yeah. He keeps forgetting this somehow, but yeah.
Yes. I think it's just because of probably that year living on his own has thrown out his awareness of exactly what
he's
capable of.
He'd know when to compare himself off as like, I'm the best and only human.
Maybe his top eye survived for an entire year in the wilderness. I can do that, I can do anything.
Mm.
So he built, using the pulley system he'd already used, he converts it into a soapbox racer and they fly downhill with the jar. Mm. And it falls apart just before the edge of a cliff. Thankfully they go over and they can see the village. And then the first two guys we meet are Kinro and Ginro, the two guards of the village.
I like the fact everyone doesn't say Kinro and Ginro, they just go Kinro Ginro, like they're one entity.
Kohaku explains what Senku's done, but they're like, oh no, if they're an outsider, they're outside the village for a reason. They must have committed a crime or betrayed us for some reason, so they can't come into the village. And Kohaku's like, well, I just guess I'm going to have to beat you two up. Where's the bit where we see Ginro's true colour straight away, his special technique, somebody else's problem?
The bubbles, I think.
Oh, yes.
Because that's where he starts.
What are these strange float orbs? Just freaking out of that. Because he's just washing his hands or something, and then he realizes this is freaking them out, so he starts blowing bubbles at them.
Yes. And then I think that's the point where he's like, well, I could easily take this village of 40 people.
If I can impress them by blowing bubbles, I can probably fucking run this town.
We're like, not so fast, Mr. Sorcerer. We got our own sorcerer. We're gonna bring him out. And Kohaku's like, oh, this is the guy I told you about who's could be useful to you. And out comes Chrome then. It's like, who has summoned me? I am a great and mighty power
wizard. He'd seen the bubbles from across the way.
He'd seen the bubbles from the beach and he rushed up. He's like, what's this? Magic? Yes. A magic fight? I'm in.
Yes. He's basically trying to stop Kinro and Ginro from being idiots. Because they're like, when we attack them, they just split in two and there's more. And then we get their science versus sorcery fight. Because he's built his own settlement just outside the village in the woods.
His weird lab that I assume is like they wouldn't let him do in town.
And basically it's like a slow back and forth. So Senku's like patronizing to begin with, but then he's like, then he realizes what this means. It's like, Tsukasa, you've already lost. Regardless of what you think, science will always appear.
It's a couple of things. Like initially your man's doing this magic trick and he knows how he does the magic trick, or he does it better, like with I've forgotten the name of the electrum ball thing.
It's the sulfur ball.
Thank you.
Made smooth.
I did like the joke as well when he's rubbing his hair and his hair all sticks out and it's like, his hair is standing on end. It's like, it was already standing on end. How can you tell it's different? But he kind of goes from like, I know exactly how all your tricks are done, to you're the first scientist. This is how science goes. So it's like, oh, you can work with me, but also you need to work with me because this guy's totally going to murder you if he ever finds you. But that science will always rise to the top, like, lunatics always happen, basically.
And you get the weird thing then, where it's like, when you go back in time, you're not supposed to tell them about the future, but this is the future, but it's just gone back, like it's back in time. So you see, it's okay, here's what happened, all happened like long ago, from 2 million years ago up to like when I was still, when I was like alive and running around, like over 3,000 years ago. And we got like planes, we got computers, we got rocket ships, we got smartphones. It was fucking amazing, man. We had everything. And then one day the petrification came and took it all away.
I quite liked it, but it wasn't their best montage, but I did like it kind of cutting back to your man and his face even more awestruck by each new invention Senku describes.
Like moved to tears by everything that was and sort of could be, and as well the kind of what lunacy, what it would sound like an amazing world, who would want to take all that away?
Yeah, he's pissed that this was destroyed by something.
Yeah, we also, the early montage is we get a quick shot of everybody who I keep on mentioning were in that double page spread. You probably get more of an idea of some of their characters than you did in the comic, because I'm not sure we've really seen some of them do anything yet in the comic. Yeah.
You can see Matthew just hanging around where there was three pretty girls who were gossiping away. You have obviously
the guys fixing the thatch and whatever. Yeah.
You got Magma, the big bully, and you guys are little creepy underlings. So you know what their the dynamic is. You know.
What do you call that kind of village? It's like in Irish, it's Craganowan, but I can't think of the proper name for it.
Clannog,
yeah.
I don't know. I've always known it as a Cranhog.
Yeah, like a small island with like stakes kind of built around it as a wall. But like two of those connected and both connected with rope bridges, so probably pretty safe from wandering lions and whatnot.
We saw Suika and her dog. Did we see Kaseki?
Kaseki. I'm pretty sure you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sawyer's in there, though, is the question.
And, he tries to win Kinra over by gold-plating his spear, which only half wins you over, because he's like, this is of no use, but I'm not going to get rid of it.
Like, it's clear he likes it, basically, but he doesn't want to admit that much.
Yeah.
But then Ginro immediately says, can you do a civil war?
I was like, you already won him over without even doing anything.
Yeah, but Sekus is like, oh, just a little more sweetening of Kinro, and he'll be on side as well. Just one more push.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see that Kawaku's sister Ruri has ambiguous falling over disease.
She has enemy wasting disease. Well, no, enemy wasting disease is when you're coughing up blood. She's just coughing up.
That's good.
Yeah.
No, she's not wasting, because she's bigger than Kawaku. This becomes the impetus of going forth, is that they're going to find antibiotics.
Yeah, because your man does have some herbs and whatever gathered, as well as minerals.
Yes, he's
some.
Been testing on himself to try and find a cure for her. And so that sets up our next arc, Chrome and Senku in search of a cure. And also winning over people to try and get into the village.
Mm.
Yeah, this is the show now. This is the story. Mm. Absolutely love this episode.
Mm. And haven't even gotten Gen in the picture just yet.
I know. I just remembered how they win him over as well.
Yes.
Like, I'm tempted to catch up and reading this and everything, but I don't know if I should do the thing of watch the show and then catch up with it in the manga after.
I'd say, like, yeah, maybe watch it as it's coming out and look at
as soon as the season's over.
Then you'd already be like caught up right to maybe like a third of the way or the middle of where the comic is currently, and then you can kind of pick it up then from the left off. I did that with My Hero Academia a while back after the last season.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I know what everything happened before this, and I can jump in at this point where the comic is now and keep up. And
Now you got to blooming read Vigilantes for sure, because they start filling in details of stuff they've been mentioning in the main comic in Vigilantes.
The cross comic stuff. Yep.
Because there was a conversation in the January chapter this year between Present Mike and the Razorhead, and they mentioned a character's name who we've never had mentioned before, of somebody they were at school with. And so the current Vigilante story is Razorhead thinking back to his school days, and there we get introduced to that character they mentioned in the main series.
Man.
It could be worse. It might be reading X-Men and Thor and Fantastic Four and just to fucking follow the story, yeah.
It's also good because you get Teenage Razorhead and Teenage...
Present Mike.
Mike, yeah. And then you can see why a Razorhead was so fond of Shinso, because he reminds him of him.
Oh yeah, but that's an apparent.
That, yes.
Even
yeah, that's apparently that, but you can really see it now in how he behaves.
Okay.
As a teenager, And Present Mike's pretty much exactly the same, just yelling.
I was going to say, is he any different as a teenager?
No, not really. But you wouldn't want him to be, because that would be the joke. Yeah. He feels like somebody who was born fully formed shouting out the womb. Anyway, that's for October when that show's back. Next up, Fruits Basket, episode 20. I can't believe you picked it up.
Yeah, I can't believe it's this little fecker.
Oh my god. I don't actually want to hit a kid, but this was a kid I wouldn't mind have... Just fuck that kid, man.
But he has, like, a whole, like, semi-tragic backstory for being the way he is. Still a little fecker, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, this is Hero Soma, and he's heard all these stories about everyone in the Soma family all going gaga with this Toru Honda girl, even Kisa, who Hero is, clearly has a little kind of primary school little crush on and wants to go out with her. Would it be my girlfriend, YN?
It's more so, like, that would be advanced for this fucking kid. He's like the pulling the pigtails kind of fucking one.
Yeah, but he still acts like he is so mature. He's basically just a little shooting motherfucker, a little guy, a little fucker and kid who thinks he's got it all figured out.
Yeah, smart ass. Yeah, not helping.
Not the kind of guy who would bounce up well off of Keo, say, when he had a little thing later on. Once, you little fucking kid, I'm going to punch you in the face. Oh, you're going to do that? Because then you'd be like, I'd be like child abuse. And then I call the guards because you're in prison. And then we're going to be, just a little, because he doesn't really ingratiate himself that well to Toru, because he's just there on the street. He's sitting on top of, like, I don't know, a phone box or electricity thing or like that. Mm. And his shoe is in the street. And he's like, you, pick that up. He's like, okay, no problem at all. Here's your shoe. It's like, I can't believe you just did what I said. You're a fucking idiot. God. And what's this? What do you got in here? Some kind of a bag? What's that? If people inside it, well, you got some water, got some stupid sweets in here. Was it pocketbook? What's his pocketbook? It was kind of nice color. I like color green. I have this. And she's like going, please stop doing that. She's way too
she
nice.
She's just being nice to this kid who's just being a little fucking brat. Oh, God. Hate this guy.
Yeah. But he just like takes her little pocketbook, which has a photo of her mother's stuck on in the back cover, and this one walks off with it. And she's just too polite. Obviously is like pretty angry with this, but doesn't know how to express it. Also, like, he's like a 10-year-old boy. How do I do this? If it was an adult, I would know how, but I don't know how to do it with this kid. He's being really weird and very rude.
I know, like, usual polite self. This was on her way to work and everything, so she's kind of like, I'm going to be late for work, and also, my mother has been kidnapped, is the way she puts it. Yeah. Bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's when Piero runs into Keo and have the little thing there, but Toru catches up with him and says, please, I can give you my mother back. It's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You're just being fucking... It's only a fucking dumb little pocketbook. What's so fucking bad about it? It's just a dumb little book. And then... Momiji, who met Toru outside before she going in, turns up and he's got Kisa in tow. He's like, Momiji, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, nothing. I just thought I'd bring Kisa, who Hero definitely doesn't have a secret crush on, along just to see how he's acting so despicably to perfect strangers to him, including Toru, your new Ane-san, One-san even. And that's kind of disarming because he doesn't want to be acting like a little shit in front of Kisa who he likes. It's like, well, but he feels bad as well because it is when she was being bullied at school. He used to be like quite friendly with her and I would play with her all the time. But after a certain point, he didn't go near her at all. And then I actually started being bullied at school, and then he wasn't around to be there for her, and that's what he feels like torn upset about that. Anyways, and also, like, you said, I lent you that new anime DVD during the week, and...
Oh, that's right, it does open with their weird, crappy anime. That was pretty fun.
Mogita-kun. And I said I'd come over to your house and watch it, and you just went over to this Toru girl's house, you watched it during stuff, I thought we had something going on, but it's like, but you said... No, Kisa remembers it differently, like, I got this anime DVD, you know, it's pretty dumb, but you can have it if you like, and, you know, I might come over to your house sometime and watch it with you if you really want me to, but it's pretty dumb, you know, it's just dumb kid stuff. So, of course, she was going to read that as, well, I'll just watch it with my own friends then.
Yeah, I think he, like, said, gave it to her with the thing. I was like, I'm not really interested in this, was the kind of opening, hoping he'd be invited to watch it.
But yeah.
You opened with, I don't want to watch it, so why would she assume that?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, it's kind of like very kid logic. When you find out his tragic backstory, it's kind of like, okay, this kid's a little bastard, but I don't want to hit him more than I want to hit, friggin' what's her name? Cause she actually beat a child, which is fucked up.
Yeah. Ugh. So, like, essentially, Hiro was formerly, like, pretty open that he liked little Kisa, and actually went to Akito, head of the household, and say, I really love Kisa, and I want to be with her forever and ever and ever.
Basically, and he went to the head of the house to ask for formal permission to date as a small child, which has gone through official channels, I guess, but yeah, you know, no harm in that, but she didn't exactly take it well.
But, like, Akito, being the jealous type, then gave Kisa a savage beating that put her in the hospital. Because you can't love somebody else more than you love me, Akito, the head of the household. That's not the rules.
Yeah, so he distanced himself from the girl he liked because he felt that, well, that got her put in the hospital, so I just better keep my distance on.
So we can see where it's coming from, and he's just acting out. Because Toru is left with him for the afternoon, so she gets... gets more like browbeaten into taking him out somewhere. But she hasn't got any money. She's been smart to the park. She's like, the park's so cheap. But she's able to work her magic on him as well, to an extent. When it's like, I know it feels like frustrating right now and kind of futile that you're just like a young child and you haven't got a lot of your own power to change things. You haven't got any strength or any ability to change things the way you want, if I put it better.
But I mean, like, he admits to that, and he admits that he feels childish.
Yeah, which is why he acts like older and more obnoxious than another boy his age would.
Like a kid thinks an adult should act or whatever. Yeah. Toru says that's impressive because it's a strength to be able to recognize your own kind of childishness and to be able to admit that if it's something you want to grow past. And again, quotes her mother on subjects regarding that. Yeah.
Yes. Hmm. And it's like, just in the middle of them, like, you know, like Toru was buying them some crepes. And everyone was saying, he's like, buy your own crepe with your own money, whatever.
Yeah, he insists on paying for
But he's so moved by the story. He must be so cool. It's like, it's all right. I got this.
Yeah. You can see there's some growing to do. And it's like, the kid's intentions are coming from a good place, so it'll probably be okay in the end. But yeah. Yeah. Fucking hell, I just have like a zero tolerance policy for assholes, including if they're little kids.
Yeah, like he's also the kind of person who tosses you in the middle of the movie, and which is fine for a kid, they'll do that, but he's the kind of guy going, oh, this film isn't very realistic. Is that a plot hole? I think that's the plot hole. I'm taking out the story already.
Why is the villain just stating his motivations, whereas at the start of the episode, Toru was kind of taken up as like, yes, I see the villain has his own problems too. But of course, his wife has her problems as well. And, you know, she's just empathizing with everyone in it. And your man, the rat guy, says a really good line where it's like, I think it's just anime problems. I don't think these are like real world problems. I was kind of like, is that a fucking commentary on the show? dear. But no, it was just kind of funny in context.
Yeah. Here's another kid who just gets sort of cycled in and out in more cameo stuff. This is like his main deal. I'll call it taking a lot longer to read in the comic. But maybe it was just like a lot of high emotions and just biting back those tears kind of pages.
Yeah.
He's there. I suppose it's kind of nice to have like a different kind of flavor of kind of someone like how they respond to the like any emotional abuse that they or physical abuse that they've suffered.
And it's also like a kid responding to it, which has, like you say, less power over the world around them and reacts differently to that trauma. Yeah,
it's like, you know, that thing of Haru or Hattori, who kind of, you know, they're more kind of stoic and they're kind of more withdrawn in themselves. And like Yuki is, puts him up a good front, but he's like terribly anxious inside. And Kyo is just Kyo. He's just like pissed off all the time. So we got that, I suppose, was Kyo is just like, this antagonistic towards anybody that he comes across. But it's just like lashing out at, just taking out that frustration on anybody next year, or anybody who you perceive as like encroaching upon your social support group, which is why you feel it right now. It feels like, no, like this person trying to keep that away from me, and she's someone who I like, as much as I love her, I also rely on her for just someone I could, someone I could confide in, even though our situation is difficult right now. But, you know, if they're allowed to kind of just meet outside the house at Shigeru's place, then it probably would be grand. Like, fucking Shigeru's house is turning into a fucking youth hostel for these traumatized children now.
Yeah, yeah, I did like that commentary, and I was like, how did this house become so fucking noisy?
Yeah. There's also a little bit there, I think it's Shigeru goes to Hattori to learn about Hiro's sad story there, and yeah. It's like, well, I thought Akido told you everything. It's like, oh, I guess Akido doesn't trust everybody, including me, after all.
Like, his little thing of kind of like, I'm pretending to be the big fool, I don't know really what's going on, but it's like, oh, she'll get her, this kind of fucking thing. I was just like, oh, Jesus, all right. You can see he's got some evil fucking plan of brewing.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Then we got Fire Force Episode 6, The Spark of Promise, in which Shinra, well, before he gets to Hibana, the captain of the 5th, he's got to fight the 5th Fire Force 3, or whatever they're called.
Apparently not all of them were killed in that fight, not including the one that was hiding.
Triple
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, so I guess they beat up... Well, I love the bit at the end when all of the 5th are just basically repeating the lieutenant's name in horror over and over again, all glasses.
Yeah, they've seen some shit. Clearly, man.
Deeply traumatized. But hey, they all get taken out for a bit.
A slap up dinner. That's how most Beano's end. Why not here?
And so basically Hibana and Shinra have an argument about the existence of heroes in this terrible world we live in.
The existence of heroes slash God. Let's combine those two a little.
And, yeah, she tries to neutralize him by heating up the air around his body.
She's like heating up his blood or something, isn't it? Or is it just like an envelope around him?
It's the air around it.
So he's basically getting a heat stroke. She keeps naming the medical condition, but I'm guessing it's something firefighters often have to fucking deal with.
Yeah, well, it's a phenomenon. Let's say you go for like a really hot bath and you stay in there for a while. You get out of the bath and you sit down and you feel really sleepy. It's something like, once you get out of the bath, it's your core biotemperature rapidly trying to regulate itself from being in a hot bath for so long, and it cools you down, and that's triggers your body's response to just fall asleep.
Yeah, it's a similar thing to falling asleep where your core changes temperature. Yeah.
It is a good trick to learn for night shift work when you can't sleep. You just come home, have a hot shower, and just come straight out of that. Don't even dry your hair. And then with hop into bed, you will fall asleep, like, within a few minutes.
But Shinra stands up, and so she's going to have to use her proper fire powers against him. But he explains that he's a superhero. He is a hero, and tonight, what's his name? I'm Deluded Lady Wake-Up Call Man.
well, I've workshopped that one. It's a bit long.
I mean, like, he can't go with Devil Man, because, you know, copyright patent pending.
Man Devil. Akuma guy.
And generally, the first half of the episode is a tour de force of fighting animation and effects animation. It's really, really good.
Yeah, there's some nice stuff in there. And, like, even when they have to, and I noticed they had to do that in the end credits as well, heavily censor the people being burned alive, understandably. Yeah. It looks fucking amazing. They've really got the fire effects like down, and the different ways they show it. Yeah.
And you got like Hibana's super move, which is someone's like a sakura tree made out of fire, and the blossoms are just white hot and just fluttering down in a not a snowstorm, a firestorm.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of taking something like the Sakura petals, like blowing in the breeze, and making each one of those like a threat is a really kind of interesting visual. Because it's generally such a thing of beauty, but obviously this is a thing of incredible danger.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was your man in Bleach, one of the captains there, who his ultimate move was he turned his sword into like petals, but all the petals were tiny little blades that you could just like flow around and fly around whatever, yeah.
Hmm.
And then we get more of the flashbacks, and we see why she's become like this is because her and Iris were orphans, and they were sent to the convent where the Temple of Sol raised them, and one day everybody but them two burnt to death in circumstances we don't really get to see. But she was like, well, they were good. They were good nuns. I was the worst nun.
I didn't even like praying and shit.
Alive. Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
So if they like suffered this fate, like what's, and I fucking survived. Like kind of like a there is no God kind of moment, I suppose.
Yeah, faith is meaningless.
Yeah.
And as well, in the convent, they were trying to stop you using like my pyrokinetic abilities. No, I was using just make flowers and things and show off the different colors, make like a controller. And they were saying, no, you mustn't do that. That's like that's not right for a sister of the convent. But
yeah,
like,
well, the way the sister was saying it was like that is a gift from God, and you can't be like wasting it by doing like little parlor tricks and stuff. It wasn't that don't do it. It's just like, oh, that's a really cool thing you have there. Just don't go like faffing about with it.
Yes,
but also she's a little kid playing with fire, literally. So.
Yeah, but she wants to faff about with it and explore it. And it's really like, oh no, my fates says I can't do that. And but the thing is, no, these one beholden to the fates are consumed by the fire themselves. So what's the point of me holding back on this now? Why don't I just like go all into this and trust in my own abilities and in the things I can see like right in front of me, like literally in my hands. I can control the fire as much as I want to great extent. So I don't need faith to do that. And that's a power comparable to God. It's like, ha, God didn't give me this. I gave me this. And I'm going to use it as I see fit without any input from some higher power.
You see that development like where she experiments more and people are really interested in the crazy stuff she's managed to pull.
Yeah.
But also it kind of feeds into her role. Everything else is below her. So, like, if there is no higher power, then it's you rising to the top is the idea.
Only the power you have in your own two hands is all you can rely on or can speak to or speaks to you.
This is all happening as she's falling to the ground after being punched in the face by Shinra.
Yeah.
And then when she comes to, she's being tended to by Iris, and Iris basically explains, we all looked up to you, and you were the ones who looked after us, but you didn't have anybody to look after you when you were worried, and that's how you ended up.
Yeah, Iris sees it more like, there was no one to support you, whereas you were the support for us, that kind of way. Yeah. So when she fell, no one caught her,
And then they all have to sit and think, how are we going to play this out? These two fire departments have just attacked each other.
This is highly illegal.
It was a nighttime training exercise that Captain Obi was going to.
That was the plan. Yes, the credits roll, and then we get like a super.
I didn't really like the way it ended, because I was like, oh, that's the thing. But then the thing after the ending was like the actual one. I was like, oh, it ends on a joke. That's much better. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, because they have the idea of having a dinner party together.
To make it look official. It's like, we had a training exercise, and then we all went out for chips. It was grand.
Yeah, Obi's got. The final thing is like Obi drawn in like a very Frank Miller. Style.
Very cross-hatching and
has just got permission to do the plan.
He's getting the gear together.
Rigs in, and they're like, well, it's already done. We're going out for
what?
A meal.
No, I got all my cool shields and pikes and stuff. Oh, man.
So presumably they're going to get all the information that five have got, and five of them will be allied with them to a degree, and apparently investigation of the first commences next episode.
I didn't like this episode as much as prior, but I did appreciate like a lot of the really good looking animation. The one thing weirded me out to a huge extent though. You take in orphans because you're like nuns and stuff. Yeah, sure, that's normal. You make all the orphans nuns. Hang on a sec, that's weird, right? That wasn't just me, right? You can't just tell kids, you're a nun now. Fucking deal with it.
I'll take your word for it, because you live in a high density of nuns than I think we've got here.
Yeah, probably.
You can go to the school, and nuns would be running it. It'd be like the
yeah, but you're a regular kid in a nun school.
There, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, this is a convent of nuns who worship the sun in what appears to be a post-climate apocalypse world.
Yeah, that's fair. The rules might be a little different. It's like, it's good for kids to worship the sun.
Yeah. It's probably something to the effect of, well, the grace of Saul is what saved you and brought you here, so you must dedicate yourself now to do his worship and spread his good word among the populace.
To be fair, I always think that sun worship is probably the most sensible religion, because it does literally give us life, so you should...
Yeah.
If you're going to thank anything for your existence, it probably should be the sun.
Well, that's sort of the point of view that Shimmer and Iris as well are trying to convey to Banner, because fire is just like something to burn, that burns things down and destroys, but... As I point out, well, you were able to do something besides that we did in the past, and fires also offer a source of light and warmth besides burning things. So
it's a tool. Yeah, it's not just a tool for destruction.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Because essentially her bit, when she's showing off, is essentially, this is how fireworks are made, kids. These are the chemicals you add into the gunpowder to get those colours.
Again, elaborated on in Dr. Stone when they're changing the color of the fire.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true, actually. We got that twice this week.
Yeah, it is. yeah. And when, like, me watched it within hours of each other, it was... I was like, I'm back in GCSE chemistry. Next up is... Well, I find a piece of paper in the computer. It is Hakata Mentai Pirika Raku-chan, Episode 7, The Rumoured Food Stall... Yuramashia. That's it. Okay. Getting the syllables in the right order. In my mouth would help. Not as weird an episode this time. Basically, they find a rumoured food store.
In a graveyard?
In a graveyard, yes. Where they serve, is it twisted chicken skin yakitori, which have been roasted for grilled 6 days?
Yeah, they're not actually stabbed through the stick. They're just wrapped around, twisted around the stick.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. That's really interesting.
By a chicken who is also twisted.
Yeah, that reveal was kind of like, that's kind of fucked up. I mean, like, not just because his body's messed up, but the fact that he's a chicken doing this.
That was pretty much it. It was basically one of these episodes where it's like, if you're in Hakata, why not try out this speciality food?
I'm not sure about the cooking it for 6 days thing, but that looked all right.
Yeah, I don't think they're constantly cooking. I think you had to, like, every day grill it a bit more.
Otherwise, it would just be completely just ashes.
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Then we've got Vinland Saga, Episode 7, Normani.
That chapter you said we weren't going to do, or might not do. End to end.
Yes, they did do. And they did it, and I was like, I wish this was the first episode.
Yeah, see, I'm absolutely agreeing with you. This should have came earlier, because... This is a fun romp of a Viking raid, and after what we've seen, what a Viking raid really is, it's hard to see the fun rompness of it.
And it also kind of means that Thorfinn and Askeladd are like bare bones versions of the characters we've been introduced to in the past 6 episodes.
Yeah, because he's just saying like, you promised me we'd duel. And it's like, we already know why he wants to duel, but if you didn't know that, it'd be more of an interesting thing.
Yeah, and then you also have that Frankish guy who looks like some kind of... more like a character that belongs in Kitaro than does in Vinland, so giant like frog head in him.
I was thinking like a Miyazaki thing with the giant fucking mouth.
Which they really focus on. Like, you can see all the way from his back teeth and the spittle flying as he goes off in a tantrum.
Oh, yeah, who's the character designer who did Miyazaki stuff and is also a Paranoid Rage?
Oh, shit.
It's that look.
Yeah.
That look.
The frog head, man. I don't know what you call that look, but yeah, very much so.
it's broad. I mean, it's a really good episode, but it just feels like it's in the wrong place.
Yeah, it's super fun, but after what we've just seen, it's like, none of the context of this funness has changed now.
I do. It makes me wonder like how much of a gap there was between him creating that first chapter and then the series... Not necessarily in print, but in like having to go ahead for it to be ongoing.
Yeah, that first chapter
because
very
of
much
the total change,
felt like a pitch, you know.
But there's also like the weird things of like Thorfinn doing Naruto running and Thorfinn doing Zoro fighting with a sword in both hands and a sword in the
mouth. Well, this is what the kids like, so you gotta fucking pick this up.
Well, kids, I mean,
I'm exaggerating a little. Okay.
Yeah, people. Yeah, people are like late millennials, early Gen Xers, like.
Yeah.
Do you wish Zorro decapitated people? Well, this is your chance.
That does kind of seem like a Zorro decapitating someone and then going, oh shit, I needed that hit.
Sven Forkbeard has decided that in 1012 that the armies need some rest. We're going to stop invading England for a bit.
Yeah, because it's about to hit winter, and winter's the hardest time to push an army through things. Yeah.
And our merry band of pirates / mercenaries are like, well, what are we going to do for money? And Astolad's like, well, we'll follow the birds south. And they end up in France. And a quarrel between two Frankish nobles. It's not even a quarrel. I just feel like Jabberth just wants the treasure, which is in the fort.
Yeah, I feel like it's something like this town is probably, like, since it has a huge harbor, it's probably doing massive trade, so it's making a lot of money. And he just wants the money. That seems to be his main concern. It's not like he wants the fort.
Too bad somebody else wants the money even more.
Yes. So Askeladd, they roll up, they get a look at the situation, the siege that's going on, and basically says, Thorfinn, go and deliver this message to their leader, that we've got 100 men, and we'll... they've got a... Basically, they need to get ships from one body of water into the lake, but they've blocked off the way through. But
I think it's Askeladd's like a waterfall, plan, basically, is the only way you could make it to here.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Askeladd's plan is, well, we'll just
do a Fitzcarraldo
carry
out
ships.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, this is the other bit which works better at the start of the series is that initial image of the Viking ship head across the moon.
Oh, the dragons! The
Franks thinking it's a dragon. Yeah.
Mighty beast.
Yeah, so eventually they make the deal, they send the signal, and they go ahead.
The deal is the Askeladd gets half the treasure.
Like the way they cut it as well, it says, I got 100 dudes, we can come in and join your side of fight. Or, if you refuse, we're going to have 100 extra guys in the fort you got to fight against as well. How do you choose?
Yeah, and even your man kind of going like, I'll kill you, kid, and is like, it's fine if you kill me. Like, they're still going to go through with the plan. That doesn't change anything. Yeah. It means they're definitely not on your side.
It's more Kenny and Ashtas, because it's like, either way, if we get into the fort and get the treasure.
Yeah.
And either way,
he was going to rob it either way. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yes. And also, meanwhile, Ashtas told Thorfinn, you've got to bring me a head with a helmet on if you want to deal. Again, that makes more sense at the start, because we've seen him kill people with helmets on. But
he's just trying to up the ante, yeah.
He is, yes. And he keeps on, like, laughing off that, oh, maybe he'll just get killed. He's, like, he's disposable. Also, I like the bit with them having to find a translator and the fact that everyone's still just talking Japanese, but they can't understand each other. It somehow works really well.
Yeah, you can hear the I assume, Catholic priest, like, translating back and forth. And obviously the French are just calling him a Normanny. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I like that the Lord knows that Thorfinn's insulting him from his tone, so he's planning on killing Thorfinn after they've taken
I thought it was
castle,
from the priest anyway. Kind of going like, ugh, like wincing. I was like, I don't want to fucking tell the Lord that. He'll fucking kill me.
But then, yeah, then he sees the leader on the battlements. Oh, he's got a helmet, so he dashes off.
Who's that guy with a feather in his helmet? That's the captain. It's like, oh shit, that's a good head.
That's the boy.
And then we get the siege has to keep on moving forces from one spot to another because they weren't expecting people to come through the back in Viking longboats. But at the same time, they've got crossbows, so Ascalad's not expected that, so he has to admit, oh, we're going to lose some men here, because they've got better technology.
Yeah, it's bursting like straight through some of their shields.
Yes. But then the crossbow fire stops because Thorfinn's now on the battlements, slicing and dicing through all these Franks.
Mm.
Yeah, the action is really well put together, and it feels like it has a nice balance of like cinematic action, but also the tactical action that is clearly having is having an effect on the battle.
Yeah, I like seeing the actual siege warfare, tactics being employed in there. Because I noticed this like when I noticed this where like you know when the guys attacking the gate, they have like a covering over it, but they have like animal hides. Stitched out across the top of them as well, which is supposed to be a trick to repel Greek fire, which I learned from a comic, which is all about trying to lay siege to like a barrier, like way station castle called Wolfsmund, which is set some centuries later, but that's some of the same techniques and tactics still apply.
But even that, like the tactics of defense are the old-fashioned ones of let's just drop a big rock on it. They can't hold up a big rock or drop hot oil on it because then that'll just leak through and burn the motherfuckers underneath. Yeah, it's just like the basicness of it was quite nice. Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Thorfinn drops his head, so he has to leap into the water to find the head. And they think he's drowned as they're setting off with all the treasure they've stolen before. Jabberth can get inside again. But then he swims and catches up with them. And I always like when the rest of the pirates have got like a bit of admiration for Thorfinn every time he does another amazing deed.
That was pretty cool. What that kid did. They're like, they're in a fucking boat full of gold and their leader's wearing a crown and everything. He's like,
that's a cool visual of, oh, they've been off the loot and Ass is wearing the crown. That's awesome, like, incredible foreshadowing.
But, I did like the thing of, like, it's like, throws the head on the deck of the boat after their great victory. He's like, I challenge you to a duel. He's like, I accept your duel. But not now. They're currently shooting at us. We gotta go.
Yes. I do like the fact they scare the same guy they scared at the start of the episode as they come out.
Can't have been real.
Because that guy has just barely dragged himself back to the camp. And it's like, I don't want to fucking go back to this camp anymore, man. There was a fucking dragon. A dragon shoots out over the waterfall. He's like, oh shit. Yeah, it's a little too superstitious and fun, but it's like for the tone of the episode, it's in the whole funness of it. Yeah.
Yeah, there was one thing that I don't think I'd have picked up on unless I'd read ahead a little bit, is the name of the ancestor that Ascalad swears on.
Oh yes,
is a Roman name.
Artorius. Yeah.
Yes.
Which, as I said, that's foreshadowing.
Well, that and his armor, like
Yes.
But yeah, apart from its placement within the series as a whole, jolly good episode. Mm-hmm. I think it was still one of there'll be a little bit more of this, I think, next week with the actual duel. But then it goes in the comic, it then goes into a bit which properly segues into what we saw in episode one, so I don't know whether I think they may have written some of their own segues to get us to this point at the start of this episode. I'd have to go back and check.
Yeah. Well, because it's a historical series, you can easily go, the year was the year of our Lord 1012.
Exactly.
That'll war rages across in all of England.
The comic does that literally in the chapter titles, doesn't it? It's like, England, 1030. And then you know exactly where you
on
are.
On the timeline.
And you run to Wikipedia and find out, or just get at the back of the book if you've got the big collections. They've always got like, these maps of like this is where Thorfinn moved through England.
Yeah.
In this,
I love when they have like maps like that, even if they were like making up your maps. But when it's a historical, like a map of a real place, as well, it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, I've been on a train that passed through that area of Britain. Interesting. Could have like anime pilgrimages, but go on to all sites of medieval battles.
Rightio, next up we've got Riosolga, episode 22, The Life of the Dead. So it turns out the people coming back to life were due to the Necromancer Minosaur, which was apparently created from Master Pink. Presumably just naturally, not through Creon's goo, because the Druidons don't seem to know to begin with what the deal is either, or that's just bad writing. It could also just be bad writing. Hmm. Or hasty writing.
Well, a lot of the characters are very dumb, so it could just be they forgot.
That's true. And so Seto explains that he's just possessing the body of Yui's dad, that he's trapped between light and darkness, but he's the guy who explains that it was a Minosaur causing it. And so, yeah, they start... Creon, like, sacrifices some of the henchmen to the Minosaur to raise more things back from the dead. But then they start taking the souls of humans. And then, obviously, the uncomfortable thing is like, you've got these loved ones who've come back from the dead, but as soon as we kill this Minosaur, they're going back to being dead again.
Mm.
And so it's time for various actors to do some acting. towards the end of the episode, yes. And also Pink's trying to, like, prove to her master that now she's here, that she's living up to her dreams as being the Pink Rio Solga. And so we get like a fight between the giant Minosaur and the mecha driven by Rio Solga Red, who's now attached the white raptor and the black raptor to it. So the white raptor turns into a sword, the black raptor turns into a gun. Takes care of the Minosaur. Master Pink gives Asuna her sword, and then the other Rio Sogas lend her their power, and so the sword gets wrapped up into like a massive power-up, which looks like a really cool toy to sell to children.
Convenient.
Yes, it does, but it looks like one of the better looking ones of those. It's actually got its own design rather than being, here's all the other weapons clip together to make a new weapon. And so you get like a nice bit of crossover. The imagery of the giant robot matches the imagery of Asuna killing Tank Joe for a second time. Tank Joe, unfortunately, does not just go peacefully back to being dead. He gets killed a second time.
Oh.
That'll teach him to be a Druidon. Then we get some acting from Asuna as she has to cry as her master disappears, and Yue also has to do it as her mother disappears after teaching her her secret hamburger steak recipe. And then, ruining the mood, we then get Creon crying as Lord Tangjo disappeared, or being blown up again. But luckily, Wizaru's back again, and he's like, you're allowed to cry this one time, Creon. Here, have a handkerchief. And he's like, thank you very much, Lord Wizaru, and blows his nose heavily into the handkerchief, making it all green and slimy. And Wizaru's like, you can keep that.
You need
that
more than I do.
Yes. And it all ends with them all tucking into the mother's secret recipe for hamburger steak. And they're all having a good old time, even though people who were dead come back to life and now they're dead again. In fact, they seem to be having a far better time of it than you'd expect. But again, most of them are like semi-immortal beings from a secret village in Japan. I say semi-immortal because I think that's the plot of the next one, is that it turns out their power-ups also have a lifespan. So I think that's what the next episode deals with.
Hmm.
One of their power-ups dying, or its power needs to be transferred into a new one or something. Hopefully not one of their power-ups committing suicide, because they seem to have gone about 10 episodes now without somebody trying to commit suicide.
Hmm.
It was fine. It wasn't one of the better arcs. The Naughty Little Sister's back next week, so I think there might be some more comedy writing. I didn't look to see who wrote these two episodes. Whereas I think the Canelo one had been done by the guy who did Akiba Ranger, the official parody show. Hang on, this order has thrown a non-Toei thing into the Toei stuff, so I'll stick that here. Oh. But the invader for the Toei stuff is Ben. Should have done that first. Episode 4, Lightning.
Did Ken back his box?
It did. And also, that's another thing I'm going to drop, so I will quickly go through it.
Bad news for Range Murata on this episode.
Sorry, dude. Sorry. One thing is keeps disappointing me with setting it up and not fucking knocking it down or just not setting it up right. But this one was just super boring. There was a guy with electrical powers, obviously by the title, who was serial killing women and like writing a specific note, like calling out monsters. And Ben's like, that's written to us. And, you know, the bellow is kind of like, I don't know, dude, there's a lot of monsters in town. It could be any of them. And he's like, no, it's us. I fucking know it. Because it seems like he's trying to frame Bem for the thing, because Bem has electrical powers. And the detective is like, oh, that's totally that electrical monster I told you about. Right, Chief? You sent that up to the higher-ups. And he's like, no fucking way, dude. We would be the laughing stock if I went ahead with that. And she's like, I'm fully sure it's that electrical monster I've seen before doing the serial killings. But it's this weird, crazy dude who like wants to electrocute women because I'm not exactly sure. He thinks it's funny. He hangs out with that doctor who he's questioning and is like, hey, did you make that other electrical monster guy? And she's like, no, I would totally be up for making a cool monster that can transform and transform back. That'd be great. So it's like the electrical guy in this is trying to do his own investigation by murdering women. He tries to kill the detective at one point, and obviously Ben steps in there. It's like, oh, that's a main character. We can't have her getting killed. For some reason, Ben decides to try and fight him in like an electrical plant kind of thing, which I thought was a really weird choice. But yeah, the three monsters team up and they beat him up and turn off his electricity and then throw it all back at him. It was just, despite like all bunch of fights and everything like that, I found it very, very, very dull. It's kind of been on that for like a while. So I think I'm going to have to just drop it because I've given it a bit of a shot, but it's really not picking up for me. Unfortunately, the monsters aren't as interesting as Bowling Man.
Yeah. Maybe like you're getting interesting ghosts and monsters and stuff from other things we have on our slate here.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like on another season, I might give it a better shot. But there's a lot of good things out.
I suppose like cumulatively, everything it has doing has everything that's going on in that particular program is being done. It's being done better in separate programs that we talk about every week.
That's the thing. It's not that it's particularly bad at what it's doing. It's just other things are doing it better, basically. Yeah.
My impression from the first episode was it just didn't feel... The character designs of the three main characters were good.
Yeah.
But everything else just seemed... It filled me with inspiration that this was going to be a dazzling series.
I said I'd give it a little longer shot because I had the same kind of impression like you're saying, but I was like, okay, maybe you just need to hit it stride, and I'm like, I feel like it's not at this stage. I that bowling guy gave me hope, and then it kind of like went, here's a different monster of the week that isn't like batshit crazy. And I mean, in this episode, the electrical guy teamed up with a guy made of crap, what was it? He was made of some kind of dust, and he looked like he had a bag over his head, like Scarecrow or something. But and he was just being useless and annoying, and I was just like, okay, this should be a lot more fun. But you know,
yeah, our three main monsters. I know Bem is usually fun, like fairly quiet and very serious.
Yeah,
like do the other two have any kind of personality you can latch onto?
Yeah, I wish I could. Bella's the boy, I think, isn't it? And then
yeah.
I keep forgetting all the names. Bella's the girl, and she's interesting enough. That creepy guy who keeps drawing her in class. The other girls are like, oh, he's a creepo. Today I was with the girls because he was looking at like internet fucking postings where the text was just the English text was repeated several times on the page. About it's like, ooh, there's a serial killer and there's like electrical damage to them, but they weren't near any electrical outlets. That on repeat. And he's scrolling this with like a big fucking grin on his face. I was like, dude, that's weird. But he talks about it with her and he's like, I think it's really interesting. There's talk of like these weird yokai around. And it's Like, she seems to be trying to connect with humans. Bello has a bunch of friends. Like, his kid friends find him wandering the streets. And they're like, hey, buddy, where you been? But it was, like, at nighttime. I was like, what is the deal with these kids? Did they just wander the streets at night? He feels like he's not fully finished. I don't really get why he has three friends. Because he seems to be like, I don't even want to be a human kind of thing. Whereas the girl's actively trying. Bem is kind of a flat affect. You get what he wants because he literally states it out loud. But I don't really get much personality from him as well.
Yeah, well I only really ask because what it also puts me in mind of is something like Geralt of Vanishing Line, which also has sort of a Monster of the Week set up with a big mystery sort of tied into it overall.
But the characters are much more likable.
Or fun. You got like Sword, who's a guy called Sword who rides around in a big motorbike and eats Brontosaurus burgers, and then he might put on some armor and fight a monster at the end. Or he might not. He'll just punch it with his big fists.
Yeah, yeah. That thing was a lot more fun, and it had a lot more like jokes, and the design was great as well. But this thing, like, the design is good on the main guys, and I feel like they're missing some essential heart or element, and I'm not fucking sure what it is. But it's not there. And yeah, Copcraft, I'm having like nearly the opposite problem. Like, this setup is fucking great, but you keep squandering it. How do you do this? Frustrating for me, yeah.
Mm. Oh, well.
Well, bad news for my RSI is One Piece Pirate Warriors has been announced. One Piece Pirate Warriors 4 for 2020.
Mm.
Taking you all the way up to Cake Island.
Oh, okay.
Looks like Reiju will be playable in this trailer. Maybe, I mean, if Bloomin' Cat Vibe is playable, then
DLC content.
The DLC for these games is normally just extra costumes.
Oh, okay.
So a Garfield costume.
Fortunately,
for him,
rather than unfortunately. Because you never have to buy it unless there's a particular costume you're really enamored
of. But then there might be then.
Anyway, we'll get to One Piece shortly, but first we've got Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, the ocean planet, become a mermaid and swim swim. Is that correct?
It is, good. Well, just here's your belated Star Twinkle Pretty Cure coverage, so I'm still an episode behind. I don't know, I just need to find some better sources and things to get them more currently. But yeah, that's not much to kind of say to go to like the water planet, which is literally a planet made out of water, and it sort of took out of Mario Galaxy style of thing, where it was this big ball of water, but then beside it there were like small little planetoids and stuff, which have their own like similar atmosphere, just kind of moving around within this.
Okay.
Which again, cool, kind of interesting sci-fi idea. Just used for mostly frivolous purposes, because it's like, hey, we have this little hermit crab alien, Yana. I don't know. And have you seen these little like transform powers? You can transform into like a mermaid or a thing, will be able to breathe underwater, and like Hikaru, the kind of alien maniac, thinks, oh, it's not, doesn't go straight to mermaid thing. Oh, I can turn into something else and go out and swim inside. I'm going to turn into like a fishman alien, like a total like creature from the Black Lagoon style monster thing, will be outside there. It's like I don't want to turn into that, Ikaru. Why don't we just become mermaids instead? Which means we get like different costumes, which you can.
I was going to say, it's just an excuse for a new costume, right?
And then use for merchandising purposes. Iwan comes back, who was the Cyclops, who has been kicked out of the Knot Raiders for, I guess, failing too many times after that whole debacle with Cure Cosmo on Planet Rainbow. And I was consumed with rage. I did a grudge at Kira Cosmo because, like, it's your fault that I got fucking kicked out of the space pirates. And it's like, dude, you've petrified her entire planet. I think if anything, your grudge is misplaced. What the fuck, dude? But shut up! And I guess her thing now for the next little while, she's gonna like roll up in a new like mechanical device, time can style, a new big robot, and then try and fight the Precures.
Mm.
It was a good thing for a while. I was trying to like have a go at her for like, you're just this master of disguise. You know, like, you know, you've been like Blue Cat, you've been Mao, you've been like my dog man, Space Butler, but it was all lies. So is this pretty good thing? Is that all lies? Well, is that you could betray them too? And it's like, no way, dude. Changing can be a good thing. We changed in the mermaids earlier on, it was class. Also, you can change and like change about yourself, improve things maybe, but can still be the same person inside. It's called growing up, Iwan. It's like, shut up! Whatever! I'll get you next time, Freakers! So that's all right there. Just going to go more deeper, further into the planet, and then find someone who fixed their rocket, which is currently being pushed around by Peruns, their little jellyfish alien mascot, who's trying to like do impressive things because he has to be sweet on the hermit crab alien girl, and it's like, I will be like a sail that we can use to catch the solar winds and carry a rocket to this planet to safety. Just trying to think. Be Peruns by name, maybe be a prince by nature, I don't know. But yeah, it's, again, I'm very much digging the traveling around space, going to weird planets, meeting weird aliens style was going on, which I thought was going to be a lot more like at the beginning of the series, but it isn't right now, so yay, it's cool. More of that, please.
Then we've got One Piece, episode 898, The Headliner. Hawkins the Magician appears, and the show stretches 12 pages of manga across half an hour by adding a lot of not very interesting fight scenes and really stretching out Hawkins summoning his giant scarecrow
straw man.
Not that kind of straw man.
The other kind of straw man. A spooky straw man. It's obviously playing into the voodoo stuff with the nails in his fingers and that kind of thing.
But it's weirdly not attached to his body, so I don't know.
Yeah, the rules are a bit fucking weird on it, but like knew that was going to be it coming in. There's also a bunch of like, oh no, they're attacking with more lizards. And it's like, yeah, but we know you guys can take care of that easily.
Yeah, the bulk of the fighting in this happens across three panels of the comic.
Yeah, also the dog is the only one who remembers that there is a sick child that needs a doctor. For fuck's sake, guys. Oh, dear.
But I guess they're going to get a lot of this. This was the first disappointing episode of the new regime.
It still looked nice, I'll give it that much.
For the bulk of it, a lot of the like characters who are in the comic who need to get beat up, quite possibly repeatedly, were a bit rough looking in places. But you get the good stuff of Zoro seeing this sword Luffy's got, and he's like, "Let me have a look at that sword." And Luffy's like, "No, this is my sword."
Yeah, you've the entire army hanging back and like, should we go? And Zoro's like, "Come on, just let me see it. I'm the sword guy." And it's like, Luffy's like, no, I'm a cool samurai now." He's like, "You don't even use it. You're punching them with that sword. This is bullshit."
I'm a sword guy.
Which
now.
Has the yeah, am I doing pretty it right? Much it, yes. No, he's not. That's what's driving Zoro crazy, because all he's doing is punching
while
people
a sword.
With a sword in his hand.
You're gonna break it.
But he keeps on referring to the fact that he's slicing all these guys up, even though he is not in the slice.
Luffy's like, gum pistol. It's like, a pistol is not a sword. This is bullshit. That's not a sword technique.
But it has the weird added effect that Hawkins has to sit there doing fortune telling to himself for minutes on end.
Yeah, which the guys wait for him at some points, but at some points he's kind of like, while they're having their argument, he's kind of like telling the army, he's like, get him. Come on, guys. Like, fucking go at him.
Yeah, because his thing is, like, if you stay on this island, you've got a 19% chance of survival, so stop. Don't do sightseeing. Leave. And Luffy's like, well, we're not for sightseeing. We're here to take Kaido down. And Zoro's like, that was another thing Kinemon told us not to go around telling people. And then he goes, ah, that was a lie. Hawkins.
That was a lie. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, Hawkins is kind of like, alright, I guess I'm dealing with some fucking idiots here.
Yeah, but he gives the impression like he was doing extra fortune telling that he was keeping to himself, but that's not in the comic at all. I think it's just an accidental side effect of having to stall everything more, because you've got to actually have the people say the words.
I also like he's basically running fucking, this is a bit of a long stretch, but he's basically running a friggin' tarot deck from Yu-Gi-Oh! In it. What was that fucking one called? It's the really shitty one. He draws a card that fucks himself over.
the Arcana Force thing. So you summon a monster, and then you toss the coin.
Yeah, it's basically
really good
that.
Effect.
You,
tail super bad effect for you. It's like, oh man.
What does he pull? Like the inverted Hierophant, and it's like, oh, that's internal conflict. So like one of his guys kills another one of his guys, taking one of his lives. And Hawkins is like, oh, my bad, I'll get another card next time. I'm bound to get a better one.
Wise white dragon.
I got to believe in the heart of the cards and do a good draw and all the Yu-Gi-Oh shit. Yeah, it was amusing me that he kind of fucked it up, and I was like, maybe he's not as together as he seems.
Yes. And then, particularly because the voice makes him sound like the most together of the worst generation. Yeah. He's got a very serious, deep voice. Not the most serious voice we'll hear this week, but definitely the most serious in this episode.
Like, the fact that he fucks up and the fact that he's straw man actually does do a laugh means it's like, okay, so he is an idiot in the same way most One Piece guys are in some regard. Okay. Yeah.
But he's the most stand-like.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Devil fruit power.
Zoro sees him, like, pull this crazy shit, and Zoro's like, I'm just going to fucking cut his face off, you know. Does the crazy cool slice and slices up another guy's face instead. Like, really draws out the use of that power.
Yeah, everything's drawn out. yes, basically he's got like 10 of his men's souls inside straw men inside his body so that he can take up to 10 shots and they'll be taken by his men instead.
Well, he says, if I have 10 lives, if I have 10 guys with this, I can have 10 lives. It doesn't say what upper limit of lives he has.
No, but that seems to be, I'm assuming with 10, but that's what he's
got. Yeah. That's why he mentioned the specific number.
Not that he comes into it, but, because basically at the end he's like pulled another card for himself, which means he can pursue them as the dog's running off to get medical
treatment. Yeah, he draws the card of pursuit, which means his stand can fucking chase after them.
We'll be back with that next week, probably for the second 12 pages of that chapter. Well, maybe not, because I think there's not much of the fight after this. Though it looks like in the preview they've probably got a bit more of fights, because I'm not even sure Luffy gets involved in the comic, where he's definitely getting involved in the preview.
Yeah, like I can see bits of the comic that feel like they need stressing. Like, oh, you're like, oh, they could add more to this fight, or they could hang around like leftover town a little more. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the fights with actually named characters where we see the start of the fight and then all of a sudden we're elsewhere and one of the people who was in that fight is now not in that fight.
So you presume that fight has ended off screen.
Yeah, there's one specific one which I think everyone has complained about more than anyone. The page one Sanji fight.
Okay.
Yes, introduce this new character, the fight starts, and then we never see the end, and we never see that character again. Oh well. I wasn't playing, because I do like this pace that he's got in the comic, which is partly why this episode threw me a bit, because it's not the pace of the comic.
Definitely.
The pace of the comic is, like, super fast. And it feels like everything's snowballing towards Kinemon's plan, which we'll get a discussion of probably in an episode or two to time, I think. Mm-hmm. Righty-ho, then finally we've got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 69, General of the Underworld, the Kido Ibukimaru, in which we get Ibukimaru. I believe he is an anime original until I'm told different. Talking of being told different, the clan that Rey is part of, they had an episode of their own in the 80s series.
Oh, okay.
And also there was a 80s manga chapter about them as well.
Were they as serious and
They were, I don't know much more beyond they were the villains of the piece.
Well, I mean, like, that flies with the way he seems to act, yeah.
But I really liked how they used Ibukimaru in this to draw out Rei to be a less one-note character and to have, because it feels like they were trying to go for a three-way mirror image of Ibukimaru, Kitaro, and Rei of that all being the final survivors of their respective cultures.
And they didn't even do the thing where it's like, oh, he didn't actually do the crime because he wasn't there when that place burned down. It's like, no, I fucking burned that place down, and I'd do it again. but I'm actually here for altruistic reasons right now, so...
Yeah, it's also yes. good to see Ray Liotta get slapped in the face.
Yeah, that was nice.
So we open up with a headless ghost haunting workers at a dam. That appears to have very little to do with the story for much of the episode.
Even when it comes up in the episode, they're like, this has nothing to do with the episode.
Because then we get Ray thinks he smells a yokai, but actually what he smells is mana. And he's like, ah, you're that girl. You can go to the Gegeno Forest. You were possessed by Nanashi. You should keep away from yokai. They're no good. Your doom will come to you if you hang around with yokai. In the preview
it
at the start.
Like he's threatening to kill her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, but he's not. No, he's warning her of the dangers of being in proximity with yokai.
Well, he does, no. That's him who does. No, it's Ibuki Maru who kidnaps her. Is it?
Yes. But again, he's not, like, using her for his evil plan. It's just like, oh, yeah, I just need you as a tracker, basically.
Mm. Yes, because he recognizes her as the bloodline of a medium. And so he's planning to use her to find the body of his love, because he's told her this tale. But not all of the tale. Not the part which involves him murdering
just the part that would make her sympathetic.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Smart guy.
In order to find the woman he loved's body, which was the ghost at the start, to return her head, which the... So basically, he's the son of Shuten Doji, and he talks about how arrogant they were as only, like, keeping humans as slaves. But then one of the slaves, the other slaves respected, and he fell in love with her, and he ran off with the slaves and her to settle in a village where they could all live peacefully. But then a neighboring village, and the neighboring villages were all fine. It was the leader of a neighboring village which attacked their settlement while he was away.
And just left her head to enrage him.
Yeah.
Yes. But what he had not mentioned, because this is what he was in prison for 1,000 years for, was that he murdered everybody in that country.
Just that village, that entire province, or whatever it was.
Yeah, I killed the king, I killed all his vassals, and I killed all the citizens.
Well, his dog, dead, and well, his cat, dead.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the great bit when Man is trying to stop Kidero from finishing
him off.
Kidero,
don't
like,
do
no,
it. He's a good guy. It's like, no.
Well, he's good in the sense that I know what I've done. I just need to do this one little thing before I guess sentenced to an eternity in hell.
I'm trying to put this innocent soul to rest, and then I'll go quiet.
Actually, I'll go take me right in.
But to do that, he was going to drown a large human population.
That's true. There was a much easier way. You just call in some kappas. Like, if he'd went to Kidero, I was like, hey, Kidero, can you get me to the bottom of that lake? He's like, yeah, no bother. Easy peasy.
I know a guy.
I know several kappas that can swim in a circle. It's good.
Yeah, and early when Ray tries to attack him instead of Kitaro, he gets his ass handed to him because the techniques that he uses were learnt from Oni in the first place, and so Ibuki Maru can easily resist.
Yeah. And it couldn't have been him who burned down the village as well, because he has the alibi of being in prison or something like that, isn't it? For, like, part of his 1,000-year sentence or something.
Mm. Yeah.
I really like the way he fights as well. Where like he just has the katana and then like only magic, but he also is using the scabbard as to block and throw opponent off balance and then go on with the sword. Just nice implementation of the thing you gotta carry in your hand anyway.
Yeah.
And who's doing the voice? It's Toru Furia.
Yeah.
And he's speaking like a very sort of mannered,
a posh kind of thing, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, posh kind of way. Yeah, the voice of Amaru Ray and Yamcha. He's willing to, once he's returned the head, he's willing to go back and do his sentence. And I'm thinking, I bet the fourth one also did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's like,
it's somebody else.
Like, all those guys were in prison. They couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I know who it will be.
Ratman.
Because we've not... No. There's one recurring Kitaro villain who has not shown up in this series yet. And that is Nura Rihion, the Yokai Supreme Commander. And he's who I suspect will show up as being the suspect. So one more to go. In theory, that would be the end of the story, but as I say, don't think so at this point. Because it's... the next one is a seven-tailed fox woman who's trapped in a stone, and when you touch the stone, it kills you. And then I read up that, and I was like, where did I heard that before? I was like, oh yes, end of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Don't touch that stone. What was next week's episode about?
God damn it, I was forgetting.
Yeah, I was fucking blanking it as well.
Yeah, I get excited watching it and then retain none of it.
Yes.
I'm like, ooh, that looks like a good one. And it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Just taking it for granted.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
for a character who I think is made of whole cloth or probably some borrowed cloth, I think there is a son of Shuten Doji which has a different name to him. I thought he was a pretty good character.
Really well rounded, because he drew out for like a one-off guy.
Of like, so he's now put the seeds of doubt in Ray's head of like, is revenge the best method for me here?
Like, he gets to say parting words to both Kitaro and Ray, going like, hey, both the ways you are going are fucked up, but maybe you can do better than me, who is literally being dragged back to hell.
Yes. Yeah, because of course the difference between Kitaro and the pair of them is he has no memories of his people beyond what his daddy eyeball has told him. That's probably why he can live so detached normally, but that's why also like Ray is the one thing which they mention is that's what Nekomasume mentions is like normally he's so nonchalant, but Ray has got under his skin.
So yeah, again the kind of similarities between the characters, the dark reflections and whatnot.
Yeah, because obviously Ray is trying to protect humans from yokai, which is what Kitaro does as well, but Kitaro like tries to find a solution that doesn't necessarily involve killing the yokai unless it absolutely necessary.
Like, I could absolutely see Ray being a reboot of Kitaro, like, maybe in the 90s, where they're trying to make it, it's like, I'm the last one of my people! I must kill the yokai! You know?
Yeah. If Kitaro was a mouthpiece for the conservative government, who thinks, oh, we just put everybody in prison or on death row, whereas Kitaro was more advocating for rehabilitation or non-violent solutions and disputes.
Or slap on the wrist, or I'll bring you to hell, but you might earn your way out.
Yeah. he's not inherently liberal, you know, if it comes to it, well, finger guns.
Normally he wouldn't even want to be hunting down these escaped prisoners either. He's only doing that because he had to save Nekomasume's life.
Yeah, he's got a personal stake in it more so than it's just like, well, I'll just catch him if they do any crimes. Other than that, they're free to go. Yeah.
Yeah, which, or in some cases, even if I do catch him doing crimes because he's my best mate.
Well, it's human crimes he's mostly doing.
I also like this is another one of the episodes where his kid are like, get the gang together, we're gonna track him down.
Yeah, not everyone gets a bit to do, but even fucking Wally Wall gets something to do in this episode, which is unusual.
Oh, he does, yes. He gets to be a wall. The best thing.
He's good at.
And your man, Ibukimaro, kind of going like, hey, Wall, get out of the way, man. What the hell?
I'll smash you too. I guess he's got to stay there until they've repaired
that. Yeah.
He'd be fine.
There's like no... This is one of the ways where it's clearly there's no pretense. Humans are like totally aware of yokai at this point because they're just... They all show up at the dam. And everyone's like slightly... Like, not super freaked out, but like, oh, there's a flying piece of cloth
Well, I mean, like, the guys in the dam, like, they were like, oh, headless ghost, and they're freaked out, obviously. So they send a letter to Kitaro. That's what gets him to the dam. It's like, oh, obviously, we call the Ghostbusters when there's a ghost, that kind of way, yeah. Mm. It's just normalized thing. It's still a ghost, and it's scaring the crap out of me, but you call the professionals.
Good stuff.
I think we're going to hire for Clash what happened next week in the preview, because it's just like people like, dissolving into puddles of gore. But how did I remember that?
Oh, yeah, the one salary man guy is...
He's glasses. His character designs. Yeah. I remember it now that you mention it.
Because, yeah, there's like a silhouette and his glasses is sliding down his dissolving face.
Good, like, it's good visuals in a preview that makes me go, oh, shit, that's going to be rad. Oh, dear.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the theme is, why don't these humans believe in curses?
Oh, because they're constantly disturbing sacred banners that if you take them down, the ghost gets out. Yeah. I mean, that's basically the plot of
that's the first thing when they show up at the dam, isn't it? It's like, are there any shrines nearby? Like, with the undercurrent of that you might have disturbed.
Yeah.
It all seems to be as well when a human does it. It's because I was taking a selfie next to this like creepy looking shrine, and then whoops, I disturbed it. And it seems to be a bit like people stop doing that. There'll be a lot less ghosts and curses flying around.
Yeah. Alternatively, also the forces of capitalism. That's the other reason for disturbing.
I mean, like that's the reason in this episode, because obviously they built the dam over the village where her body was interred. Yeah.
All good stuff. That wraps everything up for this week, and we'll be back next week with your actual genuine Let's Go. But in the meantime, check out our regular podcast at secretofthesoundofmadness.com, dynamiteinthebrain.com. Anything to mention coming up on Secret of Sound of Madness?
I think this is something I was meant to get around to, and unfortunately with passing of the animator and or the main animator involved, maybe it's about time we did this and got a bit more in touch with his legacy. That was name yesterday, but I've forgotten it.
Richard Williams.
That's the guy. Yeah. Unfortunately passed away this week. Known who from what Rabbit amongst other things, but also I had a part in a thing called A Thief in the Cobbler, a notorious animated feature that went unfinished, or mostly unfinished, but something I've heard a lot of stories about personally, but never actually looked at myself. So maybe it's about time that we gave it a look and see what all the fuss is about.
And
hope you honor the man's memory and get a bit more, as I said, in depth with his contributions to animation history. We'll see how we do.
My main is, Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Superb
stuff. All those animated adverts he did during...
Yeah.
The Pink Panther ones as well. I think that was all him, yeah?
Yes. There were some good examples flying around the social media sphere over the last week. More diligent fans than I. And I hope we can... If that's anything to go for, is, like somebody who I have... not done my due diligence myself in keeping abreast of everything he's done and contributed to the forum. So let's try and address that post-haste if we can.
Yeah, the anti-smoking Superman advert is the one which I think it might be multiple ones. Not just
I think it
one,
might have been a series or maybe three, I'm not sure,
Definitely remembered that. And definitely remembered like the characters being used on stuff handing out at school. But then, of course, you look on YouTube and of his collections of adverts, and then there's also a load of ones for cigarettes.
Working both sides.
You can't tell kids to stop not to take up smoking if there isn't smoking going on in the first place. Weirdly, if you look at them, there's like one where it has an Uncle Sam character for the smoking one. For the actual cigarette advert, and that looks a lot like Nick O'Teen, the supervillain in the anti-smoking Superman advert.
Oh dear.
Rightio, and meanwhile, over on Dynamite in the Brain, I've just put up the JoJo's episode, and I have just managed to save the file for the anime that didn't make his episode, so that should be going up. Shortly. With Dwayne, where we're talking about... What were we talking about? What on earth were we talking about? Lupin the Third, Part 3, Romance of the Three Kingdoms,
and
Martian yes, Successor to Zesco.
It hasn't got three in it. We're completely off theme.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not entirely off theme, because one of those the character you think is going to be a main character dies in it.
Okay.
Spoilers!
Spoilers for something which is well over 20 years.
They're doing a bit that already been done in anime previously anywhere.
Yeah, it's actually cribbing from someone else as well.
Okay, we'll be back next week with this. Goodbye! Bye.